Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about self-belief, what we believe about ourselves, what we think about ourselves, and how that impacts what we do, how it impacts consensus building and negotiation, and how it impacts our workshops and seminars and any kind of alternative dispute resolution, our own self-beliefs, what we think about ourselves. So, as usual, since this is not a scripted show, we're going to start by asking some basic questions and see where we'd like to take it, the show. So, as leaders, within our context of consensus building, negotiation, alternative dispute resolution, even workshops and seminars, what types of negative beliefs do we have that about ourselves that impacts what we do? Negative. Let's do negative first, because everyone thinks of negative more often. And then we're going to do positive. So what kind of negative beliefs do we have? Oh, we've got a winner for number one. Thank you for all of your participation and for being here. I think the first thing we're going to talk about is our feeling that we might be inadequate as a leader. Yeah, a belief that we are inadequate. And, yeah, that we shouldn't have accepted the job, which goes kind of with that. We're going to do those both at the same time. And here are interesting beliefs, too, that I think are quite common about how we feel about ourselves. They're judgmental beliefs. Yeah, people are talking about all kinds of judgment. Not only that we feel kind of inadequate and that maybe we shouldn't be the leader of this, but that we're being judged. How about being judged by the participants? Yeah, they sit and stare at us and think about us, right? Being judged by the management, by whoever employed us, whoever brought us in. I'm going to call them management, but they're not necessarily. Whoever has vouched for us, so to speak, and has brought us in to take over. How about judged by the media? Yes, which is very important nowadays since media is everywhere, and they are kind of opinion setters, which would be being judged by outsiders too. Somebody outside of the group, somebody that we need to have an opinion about us that hopefully is positive, right? Yeah. So we're going to do those for negative beliefs. You know, that might be a true statement, but the way you feel you're being judged is the belief. People are saying that being judged is not a belief, it's a fact, that you're being kind of graded on what you do, right? Yeah. But how you feel about it and how you accept it is a self-belief. Yeah. Although some of these things are indeed facts, yes. So, our next area that we're going to be talking about is the positive self-beliefs, right? Well, what kind of positive self-beliefs do we have that really make us quite good leaders, right? Yeah. Yeah, the first one's going to be that we're excellent, that we don't have doubts, we're not inadequate at all. We're excellent in our abilities, and we're really good at this. This is a good positive self-belief that is shown up in how we treat others, that we are good with empathy, that we understand people. Remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement, but we understand how to deal with people. We have empathy. We understand where they're coming from and what they need us to do and how to create consensus. Yes. Yeah, this is true too. That if we have the empathy and we are excellent, we can control the group dynamic. That's one of our positive self-beliefs, that we're good at it. Yeah, I'm going to go for this one. People are talking what I'm going to call charismatic leadership. Got the right personality, really know how to deal with people, have empathy, and can really get the group together as a team to go forward and get success. Yeah, really, really influence direction. Our positive self-belief is our own experience, right? Yeah. And our reputation goes into that. And that we are a positive self-belief that we are a really good spokesperson for the group and we can deal with the media. We can really get out there and answer questions in a positive light, right? Yeah. So now let's get started. We've got lots of things to talk about, as you can see. So let's get started at them. Let's do inadequacy. Let's do them one after another. Kind of inadequacy, and you shouldn't have accepted the job because now that you're there, you're not so sure you're the one. You know, Muhammad is making a really good observation, probably about all of this. Muhammad says that belief may not be accurate and that adequacy is judged by outcome. Yeah, your self-belief that you're inadequate, as Muhammad says, is not necessarily accurate. Yeah, you have to look at that and go, you know, why would I think that I'm not good at this when I really am? I'm handling this very well. We're getting somewhere. We're making a team. We're reaching consensus. And we're going to have a successful outcome. And we may have to do it in steps. I mean, we've talked about modifying what success looks like sometimes because we have to define it. But, hey, we're doing all right. My self-belief can change. This is a good point, too. Barbara and others are saying that belief in our own inadequacy is often an indication that you're overworked and you need assistance. Sometimes that's true. You know, there's kind of an Americanism that's probably translated everywhere. I mean, I don't know what even was originally in English. But bit off more than you can chew. You ever hear that expression, I've bit off more than I can chew? It means, like Barbara says, it's not that you're inadequate, but you've got too much. You're overworked, and that's why you're feeling stressed. You need help. You need to get some assistance. You need to get a budget for assistance. People are talking about volunteers and interns and like that, maybe. I'm going to say it depends on the complexity. It depends on what you need. I mean, if you need, like, office help, keeping track of stuff help, it depends which part is overworked. I truly advocate trying to get the budget to hire somebody who's competent. Because interns are nice, and so are volunteers, and they're lovely, and we have them. Well, we don't have volunteers, but we have interns. And we have volunteers, too, for events. But they need training. They need help. They need lots of guidance. Because they're new, and they don't know what they're doing yet, and like that. And if you can get someone, maybe this someone will be in charge of the interns and the volunteers. But you're going to need an office manager if you've got that much detail and that much effort that needs to be put in on what I'm going to call just the process, the day-to-day, keep track of everything, find out what's going on, who's been contacted, what they said, that kind of stuff, right? I think there should be someone in charge of that and in charge of the interns. And that someone's probably not you as leader. Because you're leading more than one thing. You're a very busy person, right? You've got several clients, several groups kind of being all in need, right? So you're going to need, it's not that you're not capable, but you're going to need some help with the details so that you can focus on really doing what you do best, which is lead, right? And not get bogged down in did everybody respond to the email? Yeah. So Barbara and others are true. Belief in your own inadequacy is often because you're too overworked. Yeah. And you do need assistance. Erin and others are talking about expert advice. To really to make certain that you're on the right path, right? and that you are really, really handling this, and that you're going to call in an expert and find out what they think, right? And if they have an opinion based on what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. Very important, very useful. More so than important is very useful, right? To really understand what it is that we are doing, what it is that we are doing correct, what it is that we might be doing wrong, to have a suggestion about the group dynamic. An expert to come in, I picture the expert not somebody that you just talk to, because if you, like a psychiatrist or something, because if that's valuable. But if you just talk to somebody about your self-beliefs, you are coloring it with your own self-belief, right? Yeah. So it's kind of biased in a way, because you have an opinion about yourself and what you're doing, but they need to form that opinion. I think whoever it is that's the expert for you needs to come to the group, see you in action, really give you an unbiased opinion, because quite frankly, they might think you're fabulous, and you probably are. It's just that you're not certain, right? Yeah, fabulous. You probably are fabulous. Yeah, why not? It's just that you're kind of uncertain about it, and that's why you need to have someone come and watch. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think this might be true. Theo says that if you have a negative self-belief, you have to be careful that it doesn't become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah, we've talked about this in prior shows. By the way, prior shows are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. But we've talked about this. We've talked about self-fulfilling prophecies. And sometimes if you think you're inadequate, you're going to maybe fulfill that prophecy by acting in an inadequate manner because you're convinced that's the best you can do. Which is why somebody has to tell you that you are most definitely not inadequate, and show you where improvement could lie. Mm-hmm. And that's where the expert needs to come and really watch. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about this belief that we're being judged, which is kind of a fact. Because as leader, you're kind of always being judged, right? People want to know that you're the right one to follow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you are, kind of, really, being judged. Mm-hmm. That's not in your head, as they say. Mm-hmm. So the belief that you are being judged, how about by the participants? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the main thing you need is transparency, as Eric and others are saying. You need to start right off by telling everybody what the rules are. The first one, of course, being the civility rules, right? Yeah. The civility rules at their very base, for those of us who are new and for those of us who just like thinking about them, the civility rules say we will not be rude to one another. We will not be rude to each other. We will act in a civil manner. We will take turns when speaking. We will respect everyone. We won't roll our eyes, groan, mutter, pass notes, which is now texting, to other people in the group, which makes them giggle. Yeah, no to all of this, right? Yes. And you tell this right up front. Mm-hmm. I do. And you enforce the civility rules because your participants are judging what they can get away with, let's face it, especially if it's not a group that's all of the same mind. They all have to kind of be brought together as a team, right? And they want to know that you're a really good leader and you know how. And one of the ways to affirm this is to enforce the civility rules. Tell everybody about the rules and any other rules you've got and any other requirements, right? And then you enforce these rules and requirements immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. Yeah, because then everybody knows that that's the way it is. And you know what? Like little children, they will be happy that there are some rules that they understand and can follow. It won't be a problem. You have to assert that you are the leader and this is how it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, as Deshaun says, it creates a convivial atmosphere with physical and emotional comfort. Yeah, a convivial atmosphere with physical and emotional comfort. I feel comfortable. I feel that we're going to get somewhere. I feel that I'm in the right group, right? Yeah, all good things. How about being judged, in addition to by the participants, how about being judged by what I'm going to call management? Whoever is in charge, whoever you report to, whoever wants to see the results, right? A lot of times that might not be a person. It might be a team, a board. It might even be the public, I mean, as far as management goes. But somebody asked you to be leader and hopefully is paying you. And you are providing them with updates on the results, right? It doesn't have to be a 73-page written report, but it's updates on the results. They're kind of overseeing it, right? They're thinking about it. So these people, these groups, whatever it is that we're going to call management, are judging you too. Yeah. You know, this is a very, very important point, and I stress it a lot, so I'm glad that you folks are listening. A whole bunch of people, Teresa and others, says that when you have management, then you need to negotiate boundaries in your contract and know your authority to decide the consequences of noncompliance. Thank you. Oftentimes, I am brought in when a group is having difficulties. It's kind of my specialty. We're not going to call them failed because I hate to use the word failed, but let's face it, they've failed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They already have tried. It hasn't worked. There's already hostility. They're not a good group, and they are the group that must be in on the negotiation for some reason. Usually it's corporate, and usually it's because they are of certain level that they have to agree. Mm-hmm. A certain corporate level. Yeah, I guess kind of employment level. Mm-hmm. So you've got a group that's already hostile. Or even if you don't have a group that's already hostile, but you're being asked to be the leader, right? You want to know, and I want to know, because I know you want to know, because this is what I always want to know. You're going to be judged on your performance, right, by whoever has brought you in, whether or not you can make the group do it, whether or not you can come to the conclusion, whether or not you can get a successful outcome. Before you set your foot in the room, as Teresa and many others are saying, you need to negotiate your contract, and you need to have boundaries. You need to know what kind of authority, because the group is not necessarily going to just blend together just because you showed up. You need to know what kind of authority you have, and if someone isn't compliant, what you can do about it. Right? Yeah. Because there's always at least one person, sometimes a little clique that has to be separated out, of people who are hostile and don't want to be compliant. They don't want to be there, and they want the group to dissolve and to go away and stop pestering them, right? Or they disagree with what the group is trying to do, or they really, really hate somebody in the group and want them to fail, mm-hmm. Which is probably what happened to the prior leader. Yes, thank you. Sometimes the prior leader is one of your participants now, and you've been brought in to take over from them. Human nature says, and I'm an understanding, I have empathy for human nature, that if you have failed miserably as leader of the group, you do not want someone to come in and succeed, because it means that the failure was on you It really does, doesn't it? Yeah. The failure was on you. You couldn't handle it. Therefore, the group failed. Well, you want to show that you couldn't handle it because nobody in their right mind could have handled it, right? Right. Yeah. And so there is the... it's more than a tendency. There is the idea that I did not fail. The group failed, right? I just couldn't. But that doesn't mean that anybody could have, right? Yeah, you don't want somebody else to succeed where you fail. Human nature. So you need to have boundaries. You need to know what you can do about that. Can you affect them monetarily? Yeah, that's always a good one. Because everyone notices that. Just talking to them will help. But I like to have a stick. I like to know that I can actually enforce the civility rules if I have to. Yeah. I'm very big, and I need authority. I need authority to take over that group. And I need to replace people if I need to. I need to have options of what I can do so that I can tell people what I can do. Yes, this is true too. Bobby and others are saying you also need to define what success looks like so you know when you've achieved it. And that definition has to include the management and the team and the media too, which we're getting to really, media judgment. But the participants have to judge if we're reaching success by understanding and defining what success looks like. And so does management. You have to know what it is that you're going for so you know if you've got it, right? What does success look like? What would success be? Yeah, how will we know when we achieve it? Well, this is what it looks like. So you need to define it. Sometimes you need to modify it, right? Because sometimes you've got something that's too big at the moment and has to be worked down. You also, Ellis and others are saying you need management consensus as to the next steps. Yeah, you might need to keep management in the loop, tighter than sometimes more specifically than in other times. Yeah, sometimes you need to really keep them constantly in the loop, make them come to the meetings and like that, so that you can really, really discuss it and they really understand the direction that it's going, right? And sometimes it's a more long-distance thing. You don't need them to really be there. Sometimes they're there. Sometimes you can require them to be there kind of at the beginning when we're all getting used to one another and there's a new sheriff in town. And so the boss has to come and kind of validate that we're now going to do this, right? Yeah. And one of the things that you should have is the ability to call forth the big guns. Yeah, the management. And really have them come and see what's going on. Yeah. That's an enforcement measure too. Yeah. Because, well, it'll tell somebody about the civility rules and that they will be adhered to or there will be consequences. Yeah. Yes, I've actually had people, even when I call in the big boss, the management, I've had people go off the deep end civility rules and really not take the hint at all and actually be dismissed on the spot for just being obnoxious. And sometimes, and they have been warned, and sometimes that even means a demotion. Yeah, because only people of a certain level can be there. And everybody at that level has to come. So they actually get demoted. But, you know, when that happens in public like that, it's like a public hanging. It does have a quelling effect on the other participants, and then we go forward in peace. Yeah. So, what's the next up for judgment? We have a self-belief that we're being judged negatively. No, we could have a self-belief that we're being judged positively for all of this too, which will wear off, which will impact how we deal with the other people in these scenarios. And we are, of course, being judged by the media also, if it's something interesting. And even if it's not something generally interesting, as in traditional media, nowadays everybody's got media, and well, we might hit the blogs, right? Which is why I ask my participants and everyone else not to tweet, etc., while we're doing it, because the process is not all that smooth. Tweet about our success. And let everybody know how fabulous it was, right? But in the middle, geez, we're still in process. You don't have anything to say yet, now do you?
Yeah.
So, the media. Yes, quite a few people, Carla and others, are saying you need to select a spokesperson. Absolutely, positively. Because you don't want everybody in the room to be writing on the internet how it's going and what you're doing. Because it's going to be taken out of context somewhere along the line. You can bet your bottom dollar on it. You can absolutely be certain that it will be taken out of context somewhere along the line. And it's going to be ugly. And you don't want that, right? Right. Yeah. So you need to select a spokesperson. Oftentimes it is us, the leader. It does not have to be, though. It's just the spokesperson has to be good on their feet. They have to be able to answer questions. And the spokesperson needs to be really up on it and understand what light we are shining as a group. And not just go off on some sort of a tangent. No. We decide how we like to portray, and then we portray. Yeah, that's the tricky part. Yeah. Yes, so that's what you need to do. You need to show how it is, what it is that we're doing, what it is that we are projecting, right? Right. Yes. And that's the spokesperson. Yes, this is true. Phil and others are saying the media sways public judgment. Yeah, because we're talking about judgment by the public, right? Judgment by outsiders. Media sways that. Because people don't know, and they listen to experts, which are the media to them, they're experts, and if it's presented one way or another, that's the way it'll be presented, right? Right. Some others are talking about celebrity endorsement. Mighty fine if you can get it, and it's the right celebrity. To pay for celebrity endorsement, A, would be a very expensive proposition. But even if you've got the budget, I don't know. You would have to have the right celebrity. It depends. It depends on the issues, really. Sometimes, okay, I know this from locally, the football team, which is a national professional football team, the players, to show that they are good citizens, and it's popular in this area, I guess required is a big word, but they are greatly encouraged to kind of do something charitable, do something good for the world, stand up and get pictures taken with, I don't know, sick children or something. And sometimes whatever your trying to do to make the world a better place, sometimes a celebrity who wants recognition doesn't necessarily need to be actually paid. And if they are actually paid, they could give back the money as a donation, right? And not actually be out of pocket to you, just go into a different pocket. Yeah? So you have to think about that. But yes, celebrities, sometimes they really are on your side and they'd be willing to say so because it's also good for them. It makes them a very fine human being, right? Right, yeah. And so you have to understand that it's both sides, that you get a benefit, but they get a benefit too. What's wrong with that? That's the best kind of arrangement. Mm-hmm. So judge by outsiders. We've already talked about media, right? This is a really good point that Lee and others are making, that outsiders, the opposition, judges you as an analysis for weakness. What an idea. Lee, you're so smart. Yes, there's folks out there on the other side of whatever it is you're trying to do. Gun control. I don't know what it is that you're trying to get done. And it might even not be something that public and general good for the world, but they are looking at you and they want the opposite, right? So they are judging leadership, etc., for weakness. Yeah, they want to know how they can get their side to be the winning side. Mm-hmm. Opposition analysis for weakness, yes. Yes, Allison and others are saying also whether or not you're likely to win. I think that sometimes people who join in with something do it for the obvious reason, for the purpose, right? But also for a whole host of maybe even subconscious type reasons. They want to be affiliated with this group. And one of the things that they judge it, whether or not it's my kind of group, right? You do that when you join something. You judge whether or not these are my peoples, right? This is my kind of group. This is the thing that I want to be affiliated with. You judge it. And one of the ways that that's judged is whether or not you think they're going to win. Yeah. I like to be on the winning team. How about you? Yeah. And so you make a whole bunch of judgments concerning whether or not you'd like to be in this group. Who else is in the group, maybe, would be a consideration. Who else is in there, right? Yeah. You know, that's just human nature, and also you want to be on the good team, the cool kids team, right? The other night, and I was thinking about this just the other night. Last night I went to a charity event. And they had a sign-up sheet. You could pay a certain amount of money for a slot, a ticket, so to speak, to go to a party that they were going to do in August. And there were 20 spaces, 20 slots. And, you know, it went empty, the sign-up sheet. It was not a silent auction type thing. It went empty, and it wasn't very expensive. It was like $50 to go to the party, to get a ticket, so to speak. And for the longest time, it was empty, the page, because nobody wanted to sign up for something that they didn't know if other people would sign up for. It seemed kind of undesirable, right? You wanted to be the last one of the 20 and not number one, send your friends, right? And it was really getting towards the end of the auction time period. And there was a completely empty page. All 20 slots were empty. And so I pointed this out to some, it's a charitable organization, so it's board members, to some board members and some friends. And I said, let's all sign up for it so that we can go to a party. It's not very expensive. It sounds like fun. And so I signed up first so everybody would know I was serious. And then a dozen people that I had kind of connected with said okay, and they signed up. And then there was a frenzy for the last few spots because it was a desirable thing. Now other people wanted to go, right? And that's human nature. You don't want to be part of something that's kind of, I don't know, that doesn't seem very good to me, for the other people, right? Yeah. So you need to be the one that people want to be with. Yeah. And so to make that a really positive thought, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to be judged by outsiders as the cool kids, as the ones who want you want to be with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whether or not we'll win is the key to it. And it's human nature to desire the winning side, as a lot of people are saying. Tzu also mentions that sometimes the judgment by outsiders is very much more specific and is for funding, for money. Yeah, are you going to get the grant? Should we give you money? What kind of a group are you? What's your track record? How many people do you have in your organization? Mm-hmm. What's your budget now? How's it spent? Yeah, that kind of stuff. So you get judged by outsiders who you've asked to give you money. Right? Right. Now let's work on our positive self-beliefs, or it is my self-belief that we're going to run out of time. Yes. Mm-hmm. So they were not necessarily negative self-beliefs. It depended how you thought about these things, but you need to think about them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about positive self-beliefs? Yeah. That you are excellent in your abilities, right? Alba says that self-confidence gives participants confidence. Yeah. Self-confidence gives participants confidence. If my leader really looks like they know what they're doing and has a good track record and stuff, then I feel confident that I'm on the winning team, like we just discussed, right? I've judged it. I, as a potential participant, have judged that this is the team to beat, that we are really, this is going to be good, right? Mm-hmm. Because my leader has lots of self-confidence, and I have confidence in my leader. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hussein says you want to follow a leader who knows what they're doing. Really, that's true. You want to follow a leader who knows what they're doing. Yeah. Yeah, Hussein's giving examples of when that wasn't true. And of course, well, we're going to run out of time, but of course, we would not be leaders who don't know what we're doing. Or at least give the impression that we know what we're doing and call in an expert and make sure that we do. Right? We talked about that. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, this is a good point, too, that Angela and others are making. And we've talked about this. Prior shows archived on the website recipeforpeacenow.com, that sometimes leadership style changes depending on the situation. I say that it changes depending on the culture, but it's not necessarily a personal culture. Right, an ethnic culture. Sometimes it's corporate culture, too. And they may be intertwined, but corporate culture needs to be understood also. And it is really, really true that some groups need more actual follow the leader, I know what I'm doing, come this way now, type authoritarian leadership. And some groups need more of a democracy, I'm the member of the team, I'm just the leading member of the team type leadership where we all discuss everything, right? That is something that you have to judge as leader and that you can know from past performance also what kind of leadership style you should evidence. Now, I'm not telling you to change it completely because that's kind of not going to be good because you won't know what to do in the middle of everything. But you can change your control level depending on what's needed, right? For example, the example I just gave where you have someone who is a prior leader and they wish to be disruptive, you see. Now, at the beginning, you need more control. As you head towards the successful outcome, you might be able to be a little less strict, although still immediate, consistent, and fair, in enforcement, because the team has now gotten together as a team, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what you're going to be able to do, right? What's leadership style? We also talked about empathy as a positive self-belief, the empathy that you can create a strong dynamic, the empathy that you understand, the self belief that you understand people well and what to do with them and like that. That's really a self-belief also, right? The empathy to create a strong dynamic, yes. People are talking about the fact that you have to remember that it's understanding, not agreement, correct? And the 5W questions, right? And whenever we think about understanding people and empathy and what to do, we always think of the 5W questions because they will lead us to that understanding. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, why. It'll get you down to what's going on. What is it that's happening? What is it that we need to do? Yeah, what kind of agreement are we going to reach? These are all important to know. Who you are, what is your desire, what it is that you think you need, and so that we can think about it and bring it to consensus. Where did you get that idea? Where are you from? When did you know it? When was it told to you? Why do you think that? Also under the who, I'd like to know who you report to, right? Who's my invisible participant? Someone in, not in the room, but who one of my participants reports back to, not necessarily formally, but reports back to, and my participant needs their approval, seeks their approval, right? Yeah. If we've got invisible participants, I like to invite them into the room in real life. So they can hear firsthand. And they can give us their opinion. Yeah, and tell us things. You'd be surprised. Sometimes we find out, the group finds out something that none of us actually realized. Because a lot of times what I call the invisible participant is indeed somebody who is has great experience, for example. And it's fabulous. And we really do want to know all about whatever it is they're telling us. Because it's important. Yeah. And we want to know. Yeah. So the 5W question is to get down to what's going on, basically speaking. Said in a very polite manner, and you have to decide which ones to break out. You might not take all of them. And when. And if, and in front of everybody, or maybe privately during one of the timeouts. Right. We're going to charisma. And civility control and like that. If you've got a strong leadership style, and it is, in my opinion, important to have some charisma too, there's an old expression that, yeah, Suki is saying that you need to enforce civility rules in a manner that doesn't put their back up, in quotation marks. You know how some people rub you the wrong way? And they always seem like they're fighting. Yeah, you ever know people like that? They always seem dissatisfied and like they're arguing with you. And they're really not. Maybe they are. But they've got kind of that nature. And it's kind of putting off. My grandmother, who I loved very dearly, always had an expression that I bet everybody knows, which is a global show, but I bet your grandmothers all had the basic same expression. Yeah? And the expression is, it's easier to catch flies with honey than with vinegar. It's easier to catch flies with honey than with vinegar. That means if you want to get people together, if you want to get all your flies in one group, play nice. Be charismatic and not nasty. I think that's good advice, and I do it because I think it's good advice. Yeah, those of you who have seen me in action know that I'm fairly pleasant. I try not to really fight with enemy. I don't like to put people's back up, as Suki says. I think it is better for the group dynamic. Also, there's a certain spectator sport to fighting that I don't feed, right? Yeah, people kind of get amused. No. We are not amused. We are not amused. So yeah, so the leadership style and the idea of making a convivial atmosphere so people want to come back, right? Yeah, it's really so they want to come back. Yes, as Thomas says, charismatic rather than bombastic will create a more convivial atmosphere. And you need to remember that. And that's not only true of men. you think about men being kind of bombastic, but sometimes women kind of overcompensate and they get kind of nasty. No! Remember, always, 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 that we as leaders are models of the civility rules. We are models of the civility rules. We as leaders are models of the civility rules. Yes, we will not go nasty. No, 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 no. We are models of the civility rules. We are fabulous, right? Right, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true, too. Brody says that having a charismatic personality is also a positive trait for media spokesperson. Mm-hmm. It is true that the media is somewhat visual, even the non-traditional media. Everybody's got a camera that takes a video and like that. And to be more charismatic is better. Mm-hmm. You have to be so good looking. I mean, and not have to, you know, be a spokesmodel. But you should have a fairly charismatic personality and never lose your cool. Mm-hmm. No matter how dumb the question is. Afterwards, you can say to somebody in private, when you're sure that nobody is listening, you could say this to your significant other. That was a really dumb question. Could you believe that? But not in public. Mm-mm. Nope. There are no dumb questions. Only impolite answers, right? Yes. The idea, I guess charisma is 90% being really, really polite and self-controlled. Mm-hmm. And I think the other 10% might be smiling. Other positive beliefs, that we have lots of good experience and that success will increase our reputation. These are both true statements. Yes, we have lots of excellent experience and skills, and that every time they're used for a successful outcome, it enhances our reputation. Yeah, people go, you know, you got to go to Sue because she really knows what she's doing and she doesn't waste a bunch of time, right? And time is money. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it enhances your reputation every time you're fabulous. And you are fabulous. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is true too. Eric and others are talking about publicity for our success. Yeah. And to do something high profile so that everybody watches and goes, wow, that's really good. Wow, they really, he or she really, really knows their stuff, right? Yeah. And, yeah, it's called high profile in the United States. It's issues, cases like that where there's a lot of publicity. Mm-hmm. Something that the public is interested in. Might be something that actually affects the public. Or it might just be something that has caught attention, that is interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we do high-profile cases when there's some sort of law to be changed, some sort of regulation that is being enforced in a manner that probably wasn't intended, right? And needs to be redone, needs to be revisited. Mm-hmm. Yes, people are bringing up, in the United States, we've had quite a few fairly recent incidences with gun violence. And so at the moment, gun violence regulations and laws and things are very high profile, you see. And so those are the kinds of cases that enhance a public reputation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like winning an Oscar or something to be the lead counsel in one of those cases, depending on the job you do, which side you're on, and like that. I mean, it depends on the public persona, which is fueled by the media, of course, right? Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that will enhance your reputation. Padma says that a better way is to enhance your reputation, and this is really true, is that you have a reputation in your community by being charitable. Yes. I truly believe in that. Yeah, we're getting a lot of agreement. Yeah. The reputation doesn't have to be global, right? reputation is within your own community with people that you deal with people who will bring you in, for example. Mm-hmm. And that reputation in the community will be enhanced by doing something charitable for the community. People will remember that, right? I know it's kind of time-consuming and kind of expensive, but it's worth it. And even if it doesn't have direct impact on you, well, you've had direct impact on somebody who needed help. And how can that be a bad thing, right? Yeah, I always think that you should go and do something charitable, not because it will enhance your reputation in the community or anybody will see it, but just because it's a good thing to do and it will help somebody. And you have the ability and they don't, so you help them. You let them have some sort of a education, some sort of a benefit, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, people are truly in need. Mm-hmm. Yes, I am. And George and others are saying you also gain experience by being charitable. Yes, people often ask me about how to gain the experience, especially when they're new in the business world. I don't have any experience, but I'd be really good at it. How can I gain some experience? Well, how about volunteering? Yeah, it'll make your name known in the community and really work at your volunteer job like you're really getting paid big bucks and really help, right? That'll get you noticed. That'll get you another time to do something good and another time, right? Yeah. I give a fair amount of time to charity. I really do. And I am indeed, and a lot of you know, have heard me talk about this before, I'm also a Rotarian. And that is charitable in and of itself, right? Yeah. And so that's a mighty fine thing, too. And our motto is actually service above self. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you do, and George is right, you do gain experience doing it. You gain recognition, not necessarily with a prize or something, but with people knowing your name and knowing that you're really good at that. And you gain some experience also, because now you've dealt with all kinds of different kinds of people, right? Right. My friends, we have about 5 minutes, and so we're going to do the recipe because I know a lot of you like it, and a lot of times I run out of time. And we may go a little bit over, but I kind of made an effort to be able to get to one of the recipes. I know we never hit two, but we're going to get to one. Recipe for Peace Now advocates that you have some food in the room, no matter what it is you're doing, a consensus building, a negotiation, an alternative dispute resolution, a seminar, whatever. Let's have some food in the room because the food is a tool. It makes a convivial atmosphere, as we discussed. It also allows the leader, us, to separate someone out and have a little private talk with them, right? Yeah, about whatever it is you need to have a little private talk with them about, right? Right. It's also a good way for your participants to feel more convivial towards one another because everybody likes to eat, and it gives you something to talk about that you're not going to disagree. What is that? What's in it? Wow, that smells delicious. How did you learn how to do this? That kind of a thing. Everybody likes a good potluck. Mm-hmm. Now, you're going to have food, right? Right. You need to take a survey as to whether or not anybody can't eat something. They have an allergy, a prohibition, a religious, they just don't, right? And you need to pass this information along so that everybody knows not to bring whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Also, when people come with something, they need to come with a list. Not what is it called, but what is in it, so that I can run my eye down the list and be sure I can eat it. Mm-hmm. Or at least ask a question, what is that ingredient, right? Right. I also think that you should have a safe recipe in the room. I'm usually the one that brings it, that I'm pretty darn sure everybody can eat. Mm-hmm. We also like a good adventure recipe. The safe recipe was left over from last week because we didn't quite get to it, so let's do it. It's a chicken and broccoli stir fry. I am particularly fond of stir fries if you've got an oven, a facility in your meeting area, right, that we can go to. I used to call this a cook together. I've been informed that it really isn't. It is watching somebody put the food together. It's still fun. It's still something we all like to do, and then we all like to eat whatever it is that was put together with immediacy. Yay, team. Mm-hmm. A stir fry is perfect for that. You chop and everything first, bring it to, well, you can bring it together if you like. I like to bring it in little separate containers, so you toss them in as they go, right? And easy to do, smells fabulous. All you need is really the stove and some plates because everybody would like it. Chicken and broccoli stir fry. We're going to do half a cup of water because we're going to need it, 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, 3 tablespoons of hoisin sauce, which is kind of sweet and delicious. The soy is salty. 2 teaspoons of cornstarch, which would be 1 tablespoon, right? And let's have 1 tablespoon of grated fresh ginger. It's kind of a small mound of fresh ginger that you grate. Mm-hmm. Let's have 1 pound of broccoli. 1 yellow pepper, nice yellow sweet pepper, 1 nice sweet red pepper, core, seed, chop, you know that. 2 pounds of, well, maybe even more than that. Let's do 4 pounds. Let's think about it as amount. About 12 boneless, skinless chicken breasts, which is about 4 pounds, maybe a little more. We're going to cut into bite-sized pieces. Where I am, a boneless, skinless chicken breast is easy. They produce them in mass. You buy them. It's cheap. It's easy. It comes in plastic. Well, you are, that might not be true because this is a global show. Let's get some nice chickens, cut them all up into bite-sized pieces. Yummy. Mm-hmm. Now, and on the side, we're going to have some rice, right, for underneath this because I like rice. I have an actual rice cooker. You can do as you please with what you'd like to go with. Now, we're going to make the sauce first, right? We're going to stir it, which is why we've got the water. We're going to stir the half cup of water, the soy sauce, the hoisin sauce, the cornstarch, the ginger, and maybe a touch of sesame oil, just because. And we're going to set it aside. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's have 1 teaspoon of sesame oil. It'll give it a nice little bite and give it a little bit of grease, a little bit of oil. So we've got our little sauce that's sitting in a little dish. Just now we're going to take the broccoli, and we're going to take off just the good part, the top part, and separate it into small pieces. Mm-hmm. If we'd like, and we kind of would, we're going to take the broccoli stems. We're going to trim them a little bit so they're not really got that hard bottom part and like that. And we're going to cut them into thin slices, right, crosswise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that it's delicious, but it's not, you know how it's kind of hard and grainy and kind of woody? No, we're going to cut it so that it's edible, so that it's real nice. Mm-hmm. We're going to take out our wok, if you don't have one, a large skillet. Heat a tablespoon of that cooking oil that we talked about. And about 1 tablespoon of cooking oil. Broccoli first, the broccoli stems, right? We're going to take them a good minute first. Let's add now the broccoli little slices are nicely crisp but not squishy, right? But cooked. We're gonna add the florets, which we also cut apart into little pieces. The peppers. Let's move them all around for about 3 minutes or something. This is why it's so good to do it in front of everybody, because you don't do the chopping, you come with it all chopped and cut. And now they're done. They're crisp but not raw. Right? And we're going to take that out of the wok. Just stick it on a plate. Let's have another tablespoon of oil. We're going to add the chicken. And we're going to cook it real thoroughly because we don't want pink chicken, right? 3 minutes side to side, stir fry, right? It's cooked through. There's no more pink, right? Because we made little chunks. So it should be fairly fast. another 3 minutes in the hot wok. Let's push the chicken aside. We don't have to stick it on another plate. Let's pour the sauce, give it a little stir, it's probably separated, into the center of the wok. We're going to give that a little cook around until it's nice and thick and bubbly. Then we're going to take the vegetables and the chicken, put them all together in the wok. We're going to throw the vegetables back in is what we're doing. Stir, 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 coat, 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 yum, yum, yum. Turn it all around for a few minutes because everything's cooked. We're just making it hot again and delicious and all incorporated with our yummy sauce. And, yes, you can take the chicken out of the pot if you'd like to. I was just trying to avoid another plate. You could put them right in with the vegetables, come to think of it, because it's all cooked and delicious, right? Yeah, just take them off while you're making the sauce all nice and hot and put together, if you know what I mean, because it does have the cornstarch, so it's going to thicken somewhat too. Yeah. And then throw everything back in. Oh, delicious. And use a utensil to stir it around real fast so everything gets evenly coated and you don't have parts that don't have any taste to them. Yes, delicious. Everybody likes it. Should be the safe recipe, but you have to think about the sauces and things, right? Have to read the label, make sure the Hosen sauce is okay. Pretty. Fast to make. Smells good. Yay, team. Yes. That is our safe recipe for today. My friends, we are out of time. We are. That went fast. Thank you all for being here. Thank you all for listening. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.